In this episode, Ryan and I sit down after a long hiatus, and we talk about future projects, the sequence of returns risk, and the role of life insurance in managing it. This is a good one. You don't want to miss it. Thank you for listening, and Merry Christmas. What a way to celebrate Christmas. Welcome to the Make With Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery.
And I am still your co-host, Ryan Griggs.
The emphasis on still. What's up with that there, Mr. Griggs?
Well, it's been a few months. Maybe more than a few.
Yeah.
Been traveling. Do you know when we last recorded?
I do not.
Neither do I. I think it was before the think tank.
No way. In February? Mm-hmm. You haven't been here since. Well, you've been here.
Been
but we
here,
haven't
but
recorded since February.
I think so.
Well, no wonder people, our lovely listeners and clients and friends, are asking if we're still okay. Is Ryan okay? Where's Ryan? James, are y'all still okay?
Yes, I've capitulated to the pressure, and we've decided to podcast.
Oh, I thought you would, I thought you were going to say I capitulated to the pressure and responded or replied.
Oh, no. I mean, when individual clients ask, I tell them, yeah, things are great. Things are better than they ever have been. I mean, they continue to improve all the time. I mean, we're good. No falling out, no quitting, no leaving the business, no building an agency to hire out agents and marketers to avoid client interaction.
no stress in the relationship.
Yeah. To the contrary. I mean, I've been busy. It's been maybe the busiest year for me ever in, I guess, a little over 8 years now. October of 2025 was 8 years. So that's great. Thank you, clients. It's ground me down into a fine powder at times, but it's been it's been really good. And I am finishing a dissertation, which I'm super excited about. It's due in March.
Me too.
Yeah. Due in March. We'll see if that actually happens.
It will. Look, you've made the most – not the most. You've made – listen, I almost have at least a master's in finance because this young man's working on his PhD, has worked on his PhD. And I'm telling you, I've said it before. He's going to knock it out of the park. He's going to slap some Austrians around. This is my language, not his. Okay? And so he's made a lot of progress continually, but I'm just saying recently over the last year, the progression of the end work has been there and continues to be there. So, you are getting it done.
Yeah,
I did. I had to send him off. I'm like, look, take a trip, go travel for 6 months. No, I didn't. Get it done.
Yeah, so. I did. I especially made a lot of progress while I was home in Southern California for an extended Thanksgiving time. I had family members with birthdays, and great grandmother turned 100. It's pretty cool.
I bet she didn't think she was going to live that long, did she?
I mean,
it's not really a conversation you'd have. I know.
I got a lot done there, and so that's taken quite a bit of time. Of course, clients. And then I learned my lesson with the book. Thank you all. Thank you to the maybe 20 or 21 people or so who have left very glowing reviews on Amazon. But How to Buy Whole Life, available on Amazon and howtobuywholelife.com.
It's also available on Audible.
Yeah, which I narrated. The Nelson Nash Institute, David Stearns, selling it, which is great. So thank you to the people who have left reviews there. But I made the mistake with that book of talking about when it was going to be ready. So I'm not going to do that with these other projects, which are coming. But in the new year, there will be more material for clients specifically through our website at GriggsCapitalStrategies.com. I know you're doing a lot of work on the back end of your site. I will stay as general as possible.
Well, you know, thanks, but it's been a labor of love, and it's something that we have worked on for a long time, but it also continues to improve in my mind before it's actually available. And it's that's really going forward. I'm not throwing out carrots and either, but that's the I have enjoyed and look forward to continuing to put more time in the material that's available and will be available on our client only. And then even in our learning center at bankwoodlife.com, because I, so there's more coming. All right. And I know I've said
just hit them with it. The client only on my side, on your side is going to become the primary point of emphasis.
It's no question.
We've beaten this.
Yes.
Well and good for a long time. Let's just, I know, I'm sure people love to hear me repeat it, but the first long form podcast specifically on the infinite banking concept, like on the internet ever, you know, launched in 2019 and over 100 episodes that I've co-hosted on, hundreds that
700, over 700 videos, but I know there's 100 or 200 shorts, and I think,
okay.
That's counted.
So we'll subtract those.
Over 500.
Lots.
Yes.
On the infinite banking concept, not on other marketing schemes, not on how to extract all you can from a company, but instead to viably, with longevity, with long-term orientation, with a willingness to capitalize, without the fear of early illiquidity, to thoroughly implement Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. I mean, it's we've been at it for a while, and there's a lot of material that is still relevant. Like the principles, I was thinking about this on the way here. No one, Nelson Nash's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, published in 2000, no one, zero people have ever falsified, invalidated, shown to be wrong, the principles of Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept as explained in Becoming Your Own Banker. No one's done that. It's 25 years from publication. The principles still, because they're those principles have a special being, they are necessarily true. They will remain true. They will continue to be true. And so it's no wonder that they've not been falsified or proven wrong. They're still valid. They will remain valid. And we've discussed those principles on this program. So the content of the episodes that we've previously published over these last 6, 7 years, however long it's been, remains relevant. Like there are still people who come into my process, I'm sure it's the case with you, yep, where they talk about going back to the beginning and watching to the present. It's still relevant. They're still timeless. They're still evergreen. Like there's still value there. So I feel like, done a pretty thorough job, imperfect as I'm sure it is, but gave a thorough and continue to give a thorough effort at explaining the principles of the infinite banking concept in a public, free, non-marketed, non-monetized, non-advertised manner. And so at some point, it's like, okay, let's pour additional value on our actual clients.
The ones we love the most.
Yeah, who not only watch, which thank you, but who become clients, you know, and we're not cold calling and we're not recruiting people. You reach out to us in particular. We recognize that. And individuals who do that are demonstrating a certain understanding of the material. And there's layers to this, right? There's levels to this. Once you've got the essential principles, once you've got the essential vocabulary, once you have the sort of necessary understanding, there can be more. There is more to pour on. And so for that specific audience, for our respective clients, there's more that's appropriate to give just to them. And anyway, I've made it at about this time last year, was undergoing a big website renovation. Your website is continually being renovated. And so that we have the technological capability to provide material just to clients. So that's going to become a primary focus. It's not like this is going to go away. You know, what better thing to do on a Saturday, my one day off, than to drive to Alvarado to have a discussion with my friend James Nethery? No, I'm partially being facetious, partially not. But
I feed him well when he comes down. I'm just saying.
sometimes. this is going to continue, but it's just to say that providing material to clients only who are prepared for it is going to become a primary emphasis. Is that fair to say?
That very fair to say. You know, the I have felt many times in the recent maybe 8 to 12 months that, you know, and I talk about the noise, we talk about the noise all the time, and with over 500 videos and 200 shorts, you know, what can you say in a short? You know, Nelson could barely deliver this concept in 10 hours, okay, yeah. From his own mouth. And what can be delivered in a minute, 3 minutes? Not much. Well, what can be delivered in 1 hour, an hour and a half? You can deliver. There's some, yeah, a little. That's what it is. It's a little bit, and it's highly nuanced. I'm very proud of the work that we have done, I have done, we continue to do. When you have client-only abilities, then I feel like you can say things that you wouldn't say publicly. And I'm not nothing nefarious, but, you know, you can name names. You can talk about life insurance companies. You can talk specifically about life insurance companies' particular products. You could just be more specific. But going back, I feel like sometimes I have felt like we have added to the noise because there's so much out there with nuance, right? And then how searchable is that? Don't misunderstand me. I don't feel one iota in a negative way about what we've done. I feel very good about what we've done. I just think we could do better. I want to do better for our clients specifically.
Yeah.
To get.
Well, I think it's a worthy concern. You don't want to contribute to just the volume in general.
Exactly.
You know, it's the signal versus noise analogy. And, you know, I did the whole life insurance mechanic series over 3 years ago now. People still watch it. It's still relevant. I haven't done a follow-up lecture series. There will be a follow-up lecture series, but that's, you know, a one thing that's meant to be, I think, is a signal of this is just how this stuff works and why in a more dense format. Sure. And so, you know, there's an opportunity cost everything, limited amount of time, limited amount of patience, spiritual tolerance. There's got to be.
Oh my gosh. I'm laughing at a conversation we had the last day or two. I don't even know if I want to bring it up. But seeing, I would bring that up in client only and I would flesh that out. It was a beautiful conversation.
There's just a choice of things, you know, what are you going to spend your time on? And I think, you know, for me, I want to pour it on people. So when someone comes into the process and undergoes a fairly intensive advisory initiation process, essentially, there should be just a mountain of ultra high value material that's not available for purchase, that isn't marketed, that isn't monetized, that isn't advertised, that's countercultural, frankly, in the most genuine sense compared to what kind of media we get nowadays. You can't even watch a comedy podcast without being berated by ads every 15 minutes. I mean, it's just become
15 minutes.
It's a lot.
Being graceful, yes. Oh my gosh,
it's a lot. The constant ads and sales, and I mean, I'm all okay. Sell things, I get it, but there's got to be a limit. Like I thought, the promise of the internet was going to be, we're not going to berate you with, you know, half of the time for the whatever, you know, episode or movie. Half of it's going to be spent watching ads. Like, I thought we were done with that, you know, and you could tell we're creeping back to it. It's all about the monetization of attention. And it's because the people who do that are, for whatever reason, insecure about the profitability of the thing that they're actually selling. And so they've got to sell other people's stuff. But I don't want to get too distracted.
We've already crept back into that with, which I don't watch TV. You know, I watch some specials on different, cable
streaming. Oh,
you know, whatever comes over the ether waves, Wi-Fi, whatever. They used to not have any advertising, no commercials. Yeah. Now you can't even watch a series without.
You can't escape it.
Yes, it's.
I'm a UFC fan, as you know, and you know you. I know they're doing a Paramount deal, and now you can subscribe. But up until the end of this year, you pay $100 essentially for a pay per view, and more than half the time is spent watching ads. It's like this has to stop,
and you
it
pay
has
for
to
it.
Stop.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so good things are going to continue to occur, and I'm truly excited about it. I'm excited about the work that he's doing currently. I benefit greatly, as you all might suspect. You know, in close proximity, you know, I get to enjoy that, right? And I enjoy it.
And it's helpful to me too to have somebody who's interested and competent to go back and forth with. You know, because it is can kind of feel like an onslaught sometimes. All these ideas come, and you got to have a way to like express them and sift through them and find the nonsense and find the value. And we have a little bit of what we were discussing over this past Thanksgiving 2025 that we can get to. But as an example of that, anyway, the point is it's mutual. I want to say this too. I was thinking about this on the way down. It may not come across, and I think it doesn't always come across, but the exact phrasing is the fluidity of your intuition, especially regarding financial analysis. Like if I verbalize or if I hand you a financial statement of cash flows, balance sheet. It still surprises me to this day, like the immediacy of the insight with regard to whatever the situation or the data is. Like, oh, here's the problem, or here's what's not being done, or here's what should be done. It's like immediate. It still shocks me. And that cannot be, or at least maybe it can be, but up to now, I don't think has been properly, specifically identified, right? Because I think of the time when people, whoever it was, the lady who had an MBA or something, who read Nelson's book and was like, oh, this is, you know, too hokey, too Southern, too basic, whatever. It's like, oh, you just missed. It just, whew, it just, you know, there's sufficient clearance over your head for all those flights to be going. The same sort of thing happens with you, I think. I think people hear like a Southern drawl, or they hear just how you express yourself, and for whatever reason, that isn't satisfying to the very intellectual, scholarly, secular, modern mindset. And so then they discount it. And it's like, you're really missing a lot. You know, too bad for you if that's kind of your attitude. And I know, you know, our friends on the internet who love their little, you know, we'll call them our support groups on Facebook and what have you, right? These disaffected people with their special ideas and software who want to get together and complain about what we say, you know, you're right at the front of that line, right? Of just missing the wisdom. And, you know, that's unfortunate, but other people do hear it. And I just want to draw special attention to that because it's helpful to me. You know, whether it can be properly identified or not is another question, but.
Thank you. I feel like you're giving me flowers that, you know, I didn't ask for and surprised and genuinely appreciate and love. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You know, I, look, when I met my beautiful wife, and some of you have met her, and if you haven't, you maybe have an opportunity, but you've missed out. Just a beautiful woman, intelligent, just, you know, God doing something for me that I couldn't do for myself over 30 years ago, right? When we first met, I'm in Texas. I lived in Spur, Texas, okay? This is like an hour east of Lubbock on White River Lake.
Oh my.
The cows today outnumber the residents, okay? And it was worse 30 years ago, okay? I mean, mile and a half, Graveled road, and then a mile and a half dirt road. Right. I mean, it was out in the country.
Yeah.
And so I stayed out there, I don't know, a year, year and a half, worked out there, and I already have a southern drawl, but it got better when I was out there. Anyway, so I meet this lovely girl from West Des Moines, Iowa, where we went for Thanksgiving, and it was cold, and I'm glad I'm a southerner. Anyway, her mother, my mother-in-law, beautiful woman, could not understand me for a year of my southern drawl. So anyway, it reminds me of that. And then it also reminds me of some of the nice things that my mentor, Nelson Nash, said about me. Like, when I first met this guy, I thought I was dealing with a country bumpkin. He said it. You know? Anyway, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. I will just go back to with proximity and your activity, your reading and your writing. No one writes like you. No one will read. Most people don't read the things you read.
Well, that's,
Yeah.
If anything's true, that's true.
You know, I've had more than one occasion people tell me, you know, after Ryan speaks to a group, large or small, you know, they'll, James, we have to break out the Websters after Ryan talks so we know what he's saying. You know. Anyway, I appreciate that. I'm just saying, by close proximity, and I know some of you are jelly, and you should be, right? The amount of thinking that is inspired through our interactions and what you read and how you write. So I have greatly benefited.
Let me say this too, because, and I've had clients who say very nice things recently, gentleman in Arizona, I think Dan Pena would call a high performance individual.
Ooh, I'm interested.
Yeah. Well, he had very nice things to say. He knows who I'm talking about. But sometimes I get and this is relevant to today, it's relevant to clients who may get in touch. Wall Street has succeeded, the state and Wall Street, which is it a distinction without a difference? I don't know. But have conditioned people into a state of learned helplessness where there's a tendency, there can be a tendency for people to tell themselves that they just can't get it, that it's too complicated, that, you know, to make good financial decisions, you need to rely on the experts, that, you know, whatever it is, whatever's wrong about you, that you're just not good enough, smart enough, cultured enough, learned enough, traveled enough, whatever the enough is, right? You're not that, such that you need to depend on an expert or somebody to, you know, it's like Nelson would talk about. It's just modern paganism. You know, you need to find the wizard or the priest with the words in the book who can utter the incantation to make things right. You know,
wow.
Yeah.
And it's too complicated.
It's just not for you,
it's too
right?
Complicated.
Peasant, peon. Yep. Like, so I'm, you know, dyed in the wool, anarcho capitalist. Like the elitism in that just challenges my Christianity, right? It's like I gotta dial it in, and I really don't like that elitism. Everybody, I believe this, I know this, my experience with people has been everybody of a sober mind, let's add that one caveat, because I get it, some people have struggles and they're on things and I get it, but everybody of a sober mind can come to understand these principles. And if I ever, which I'm sure I will in the future, and I'm sure I have in the past, if I ever make things sound too complicated, that's my problem, not yours. Like, I really genuinely believe that. Like, if the message isn't coming across, my baseline default is I'm doing something wrong. Right. I never assume, and I don't want the impression to ever come across that you have the problem. Now, there are times when the listener has the problem. There are people who don't want to unlearn, who aren't willing. I'm not talking about that. Right? I'm talking about people participating in good faith who want to understand. It's on me. In any situation where somebody wants to share a message of any kind, it's on that person. They have the burden to do that properly. Now, it's your responsibility as a listener, my responsibility as a listener from people I learn from, like you, like Nelson, to come open-minded and willing to learn. That it's a two-way street in that regard. But there should never be this idea that you're not enough in whatever way to be able to understand. And there are people today in and around the IBC world, and certainly in personal finance generally, who indulge this learned helplessness, who make it their career, I mean, the form of their income generation, to profit on people's learned helplessness. Yeah. And I hate that. I mean, I hate's the wrong word. It's too strong of a word, but
it's repulsive.
It's really, it's very bothersome. Yeah. You can understand this, right? Nelson Nash wrote a book for the lay individual, for everybody who was willing and able to read English words.
Simple English.
Going Arabic back to the numbers.
The like, lady that you referenced that, you know, I heard her giving a presentation, MBA. Oh, she was insulted at the simplicity of the work. It's no.
Offense is taken. It's not given. So you can understand this. You can learn this. And then for the people who have a taste already, it's the gift that keeps on giving, right? There's more and more and more layers and layers. I have a client, my second client, first client who was not a family member, called during this hiatus that we've had in the podcast, sent an email, hadn't heard from him in a while. I have very flexible relationships with our clients, right? You don't have to keep in touch if you don't want to, but we're available when you want to. Who's like, hey, I'm getting married, engaged, and we're going to go buy a house, and I'm going to pay for the whole thing with policy loans.
The whole thing.
Now, we get it, real estate prices, right? This is in 2025, it's after COVID, where price of everything tripled or quadrupled. So everything's expensive, I get it. But he also embodied what Nelson talked about in the Parkinson's Law, where a banker would have told him he could have bought a home worth four times the price of the home he's actually buying.
Oh, sure.
Right? So he's made a modest, what the culture would regard as a modest purchase, but sufficient for him and what would likely be a young family to start, paying for the whole thing with policy loans. By the way, the guy's in his early 30s. Okay. This is not like a trust fund baby who was just flush with cash. Yeah. And this is somebody who is smart, has it together, paying attention, worked hard, earns a proper living, but pays a proper premium, has built sufficient cash value, and is buying his home with policy loans. And in talking with him, where he's telling me about the money he's going to save on the interest he otherwise would have sent to the mortgage lender. And this is seven, eight years after that policy goes in force. And so he's now experiencing this whole, not just like theoretical consideration of, but living and experiencing what that's like. Never mind, by the way, the power and authority, right? No banker has a collateral assignment over the place where, you know, that shelters you and your family, the value of which doesn't appear on an illustration, but
oh my goodness,
that 8 years later, 7 years, whatever it's been.
Oh, that's too long. Years later, that's too long. Buying a house, getting married. Oh my gosh, that was going to occur anyway. The gentleman just happened to start, you know, as soon as there's, I don't know the details, but he started well prior to what was likely eventually going to happen anyway.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, that's a beautiful thing. And I don't want to throw you off.
No, it's just an example of how it continues to give. It continues to grow. I get emails. I'm sure you get these kinds of emails where I have one gentleman in particular. He'll just send me an update every now and then
yep.
about his how has thinking's changed? And maybe he'll talk about an experience he's had with a colleague or something and a new revelation he's had. And it's like, how cool, you know, it just keeps on growing.
Where does that go on your illustration? Where does that go in the Excel spreadsheet or whatever it is you're building?
Yeah.
Which, you know, the poor data, and I have some comments on Excel spreadsheets, okay? I think I've talked to you about them. What's the value of that? What's the value of the young man? What's the value of all of the updates? The real life experiences of your clients winning.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot there. You know, Doug Jones.
Non-quantifiable is the answer.
There you go. Okay. There you go. I like that. Priceless. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I speak to Doug Jones, my friend, our friend, regularly. He's a practitioner. Probably, I don't know, over 30, 35 years in the life insurance business and successful, ethical, more, just a guy that you'd want to hang out with anyway. And if something happened to you, you'd want your spouse to have access to men like him. Okay. In our most recent conversation, the word ignorance came up, right? I think we were talking about universal life and all that stuff that's been in the...
That would make sense. That tracks.
You know, it's in the news, been in the news, you know.
Kyle Busch.
Yeah, Kyle Busch. Okay. And I've always said, and many times... there's only two types of agents that write universal life. I know I'm being broad and I know I'm being harsh, you know, with some love to financial people. There's only two types. Ignorant, the ones who do not know about universal life and what's likely going to happen in the future with that. And then the ones that do know and they write it anyway. One's ignorant, that can be corrected. You can learn. We can all learn. We're learning animals. We're meant to learn. The other is a moral character issue. And so which one do you want to do business with? Okay, so that was really, that came up in our conversation. And then we, and Doug, you know, he like challenged me a little bit. And I mean, not directly, you know, Jamie. But he said, well, let's talk about the word ignorance. You know, in the South, it's ignorance, you know. It's the basis is ignore, right? Ignorance, right? We're talking, and he said, James, really what ignorance is, it's the refusal, the intentional disregard of information that is known or available. So I am ignorant, and if going through our conversation, I'm choosing intentionally to ignore information that is available. And
I love that.
Me too. Because in the conversation here, I mean, I think it fits very well. Oh, it's complex. The financial world is complex. There are too many choices. You aren't intellectually able to understand the complexities of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or whatever it is. So this learned helplessness, you know, is a result of all that messaging that we get from Wall Street and all their tentacles. They all are attached to the state directly or indirectly, you know, and it's just so not true. So Nelson writes this book, Simple Plain English. It'll insult the academic. It will insult the erudite. It'll absolutely insult the erudite. And it's just not so that you can't understand. It's just not so, right? And my encouragement is not to willingly, intentionally ignore information that's available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, talking about driving down every Saturday, he does have a long drive. You know, I have a 15-minute drive, and he'll beat me here in his hour and a half drive. you know, why do you get up on a Saturday morning to drive an hour and a half you know, to talk about. I mean, I get it. We're friends.
To generate ad revenue.
Okay. I mean, there's a driving, you know, maybe self-imposed characteristic fact since I've met Nelson, and I'm personally 14 years in the life insurance business, and I read his book, Becoming Your Own Banker. And one night when I finally got to it, and it's like, OMG, why didn't they tell me? Why didn't the life insurance? Why didn't I know? I've never heard this. Who is this guy? You know, it's the driving, self-imposed, no question, responsibility. I don't really know because I'm probably irresponsible with my time. I don't need any help wasting it. That's for sure. I'm a professional, right? But it's to expose people to the idea that you literally can control the banking function in your life and what that would mean to you and your family if you did. All right. And then if I continue to weave this in to the conversation, because you can't take it out. So I'm not really manipulating, weaving it in. There's only so much that can be said to the general public. We don't want to step on people's toes. I don't want to step on people's toes. I don't want to, you know, talk so broadly that, or I want to talk broadly enough that it's encouraging for people to discover this idea. Mm. When you get down in the realm of client only, you know they have a certain level of understanding and participation, right?
Yeah.
And then you can go deeper and really flesh out some of these things, like the Kyle Busch, for example, you know, or like, you know, a big company, you know, doing whatever it is they do here, whether it makes a difference directly to you or not. But you can talk about things in more depth, with more clarity, with less nuance, that can help the people that have discovered this, have implemented it, and they're learning on their own. There's no question, you know, they're not dependent upon you to learn. I'm not, no desire to create dependency at any level, anywhere, right? But to provide access and encourage thinking, just sharing thoughts, that excites me greatly.
Yeah.
So, you know,
if you know what's going on, you'll know what to do.
So then you can take that exact statement and principle, which is true, and apply it to very particular and very specific situations, mm-hmm. and broaden that out.
Yeah. I think on the client only thing, we've talked about this, you know, that I think about like the promise of the internet and, you know, that Mike Benz, who some of y'all will have heard about, talks about how free speech has really been just a weapon of foreign policy that, you know, conveniently, selectively used in order to overthrow different regimes around the world. And how the internet was kind of crucial to that. But setting that aside, if we think about the way the internet was advertised and marketed, sold to the public as, you know, this possibility for greater, more value-dense communication between people with specific interests, you know, not all this generalization, not all this centralization, not all this loss of detail, you know, and conformity, but it's like a vibrant web, a network of really value-dense conversations between people who are interested. I hate to use the term capitalistic, but this like corporatist attitude of let's go and just squeeze, you know, private equitize it, just squeeze out every dollar of quarterly earnings we can from it. That hyper short-sighted, just very interested in immediate gratification sort of attitude. I think the opportunity with the private client only type of media is to embody the alternative to what the internet's become and kind of fulfill the promise of what it was maybe disingenuously marketed and sold as, right? Like we really can create a private professional enriching, valuable media experience without the monetization, without the hyper short-term monetization. You know, there's a financial basis, don't get me wrong, right? If you're a client, you've acquired a policy, we're lowly life insurance agents who have been paid a commission, right? So there's a financial basis on which all this is happening. I'm not disregarding that, but the purview, the perspective, the long-term orientation, coupled with an embrace of privateness, of kind of genuine mutuality, right? Like just us and our community over here, you know, doing our thing. I think that's what we can do in a client-only type of environment. And it's on the tip of my tongue. I want to say one of the projects that I'm going to do, but I'm not going to say it.
You sure?
Yes. I've made the mistake. Y'all can just wait now because they're very, very thankful for all of the interest and the many, 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 many questions of, hey, when's the book coming? But it wore me out. So no more announcements prior to things having been done. But one of the things that has been done is I'm moving to a completely zero knowledge data infrastructure to surpass what the industry and regulators require in terms of data privacy. So that's already happened. That's not an announcement of what's coming. It's what already has come. But anyway, I think that to me is so exciting, and I need to be excited about it, right? Like the whole idea of just go do a media thing of any sort.
Oh, yeah.
Because of some obligation or like the algorithm,
Ooh, yeah. You
know, the biggest lie of it's got to be regularly distributed, you know, stick to a schedule, be consistent, you know, oh, thank you. Who do I write the check to, Mr. Consultant? Like, I'm so over that. so deeply over that. The Mechanic series is not a recurring publication. And it's got thousands of views and continues to help people. So, I mean, that whole idea is just false. But I want to touch if that Nelson's statement, if you know what's going on, you'll know what to do. He would talk about how Leonard Reed, when Nelson would fly Leonard Reed in to Birmingham to present to Nelson's clients, he would give I remember this because Nelson talked about it in one of the seminars I attended, where Leonard Reed would put, you know, he'd have a table and have a coin on the table, and the table would be everything you don't know, and the coin would be what you do know, and then the circumference of the coin is the boundary, therefore, between what you know and what you don't know. And then he'd say, you know, as you learn more, and he'd replace the coin with a saucer or a coaster, now you got a larger circle on the table, right, with a larger circumference. The more you know, the larger the area of the circle, the greater the circumference, the greater the boundary between, and therefore the greater what you don't know, right? The more you know, the more you know you don't know. It's kind of the fulfillment of the opposite of the arrival syndrome, right? Like, and that's kind of why the arrival syndrome is a lie. Like if someone says that they've mastered a topic, so therefore they know it all, it's like, oh, you just don't get how this actually works. Because if you did, then you'd know that the more you know, then the more you know you don't know, right? And so it kind of reveals the sin of pridefulness of the intellect, mm-hmm. right? It's like, if I know so much, therefore I'm the master and I know it all. It's like, aha, no, you clearly don't. Because in fact, the more you know, the more you know you don't know. And so there's this organic expansiveness that should come once you bite into the truth, right? Once you get into how things really are. I've had this experience in my dissertation going into a gentleman by the name of Nikolai Hartman, who I'm going to be saying his name a lot in the future, but critical, probably one of the best at his time known critical ontologists. Of course, he taught at a German university during World War II, so his reputation was just automatically infringed and his legacy was banished from all academia because of this guilt by association, having been a professor during World War II in Germany. However, his critical ontology, what he called his critical ontology, is like OMG. I mean, there's a particular book, Ontology, Laying the Foundations. If you want to nerd out on some philosophy, oh my gosh, that one will reshape how you understand reality and ideality. Carrot there, but that's just one example. It's like the more you come to know, the more you come to know you don't know. And imagine having a private, non-monetized environment, the stated purpose of which is to explore that kind of stuff. Like, OMG. I mean, that, and you go to the idea of, you know, the garden and having a wall around the garden to keep out the predators. It's like, there's a place for a private domain. Like, yes, it's good to, you know, educate the world for free and, you know, love, peace, and chicken grease. And it's all just, oh, I just want to give away knowledge. And I get it. I've done it, maybe done it more than most people have. Like, the mechanic series is out, the book's out. You know, Nelson's book's out. The cost of entry here is really low. So there's a place for that too, but there's also a place for focusing on the private for people who demonstrate their interest and engagement by actually transacting and becoming clients. So for me, I've neglected that part. And it's not because I set out to be neglectful. It's because it takes a lot to get going and to, you know, serve enough, to earn enough, to capitalize enough, to be able to pay, to build the platform that can technologically provide for that kind of thing. So it's like, there's layers, again, there's layers to it, but it's time for that to become a focus too. And that's what's coming. And that should be, don't get me wrong, that's also intended to be part of the attraction. Like, I would love to have clients who want to participate in that kind of environment. And I would also love for people who aren't super excited about that to go work with somebody else who does excite them. Right? This is part of the not needing to be everything to all people. I'd really rather just focus on those who are similarly interested and find themselves engaged in the same sorts of ideas. And so it just makes complete sense. It's like, why haven't we done this already? But
well, I think you pretty much laid it out why it hadn't been done. There's, you know, talk about scarcity of time and resources. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of clients that, you know, if it's available, I mean, I would participate in it. And there are others of like, oh yes, please, I'm waiting for it. What's the date? When's it going to drop? Or
yeah, some will want it more than others. I get that.
But I'm personally convinced, I'd have to be proven otherwise, that once there is a body of work in that format with that structure of, you know, clarity and whether it's whatever it may be, taking a concept and fleshing it out, like ontology, what you're talking about, and the other, all of these other things, you know, topics. But let me just stay with infinite banking. You know, very specific, whether it's an idea, a thought that's promoted, right? Or in whatever it may be, to flesh that out with less nuance, right? I mean, there will be some nuance in there, but where I think I would feel—
You mean without having to like—
Freer to speak.
Yeah, without having to like say, I'm not saying this, or I'm not, like, just to—
Right, because there's—
the point you want to make.
Yeah, and right, and maybe there's two or three situational exceptions.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it may be. I think once somebody experiences that— Because we're talking about clients, as you said, they've already began to capitalize. They by their own willing choice, like, I want to learn this. I want to understand this. I want to implement this, and you know, what does that mean in this situation or that situation? And I've not thought about this, I've not thought about that, I've not heard this, I've not heard that, and oh my gosh, somebody gets to participate in that at any level, and it's going to be, to me, it would be very attractive.
Yeah,
very attractive. I mean, so, and it is exactly, in my humble opinion, it's all of the world is going on, all of the noise is out there, all this existence that is in the financial world is there. It's not going to go away ever, you know. Just to pierce that veil of darkness with a little bit of light in your own little garden, very specific but broad within this context. I mean, it makes me giddy like a schoolgirl. Make it happen, yeah. Please.
So let's talk about this. Prior to shooting today and over the phone in November, I mentioned to you a paper idea, an academic paper idea that I had discussed with Bob Murphy, my dissertation advisor. And you and I then had some further conversation, and you made a lot of important expansions on what I was saying. Here's how it came out, right? I had a call with a gentleman in California who, you know, he, as he put it, learned about IBC a month ago and he'd mastered it. So, I mean, red flag number one. But then after talking to me for the first time and then prior to our second conversation, which was our last, he expressed how he had learned about private placement life insurance, where you could throw a bunch of money at a variable universal life contract and then indirectly exercise control over how those funds were invested in order to reap discretionary investment gains in a non-taxable environment. And my first point to him was, oh, you mean the one that is under extreme federal scrutiny right now? Oh, that one, yeah. There's a 2024 U.S. Senate Debt and Taxation Management Subcommittee report on this. But anyway, he was really attracted by that, right? Because, ooh, high rates of return. So we're return chasing. And, you know, we're finding the special hack.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Special hack. I get the shortcut, right? Special shortcut hack, which always works out so well. And so I was explaining to him that, you know, universal life, they throw all these great rates of return at you, and there's always some assumed rate of growth there. And the problem is we have a very specific monetary system in this country called fractional reserve banking. And as a result, we have what's called the business cycle, which everybody will be familiar with, these periods of great booms followed by acute dramatic declines, corrections in the value of publicly traded assets. This is the 2008 correction. This is the 2001.com burst and other similar type periods. And
1997, 1973, 1967.
Yeah, they go on and on. You know, it's called the business cycle.
1893, 1910.
For a reason. You know, it is cyclical. It does continue to happen over and over again, and that's not a bug. It's a feature of the system, and you could get conspiratorial as to the intentionality behind that. But regardless, it is a cycle, and it does continue to occur. And so I got this idea in my head. It's like, and I had a little conversation with AI about it, of where it ultimately ended up was, I wonder if anybody has, in an academic paper, articulated the relationship with or between the business cycle on the one hand and what's called sequence of returns risk in the financial planning industry on the other hand.
We're going to end the conversation here and pick it up in the next episode. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.